It's 1:18 a.m. at your 36th birthday party, and you're listening to Night Call. Hello, and welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. I'm Tess Lynch here in L.A., and with me is
Molly Lambert, and joining us, as always, in New York,
Emily Yoshida. Hi, guys. We're separated by an entire country again. Although I was telling Molly when I said farewell for the last time before I left that maybe I would just stay and you might not know the difference, you know?
You also may be back in a week. So.
Well, right. No, not maybe. I will be back. I will not.
But we do We do have a ghost mic set up for you today.
Good. We're looking right at it.
Please it's put like beautiful. Some hair on it. I had a really fun adventure that I told you guys about right before I left, on maybe the second to last day before I left. And then I feel like we all had stories that were somewhat like this from our years spent in Los Angeles. But I am a person who likes to hike. Also, shout out to Outside Magazine, who shouted us out recently in a post of recommendations. We love to be recommended by people who like the outdoors, because we are stealth outdoor people ourselves, even though it might not seem like that at the outset.
No, it's true. We're indoor kids, but we also love the outdoors. Yeah.
I like to look outdoors from indoors.
That too.
You like greenery. I've seen you.
No, I love greenery.
You love trees.
I like to sit outside.
Yeah, you like to be outside.
I do. It depends on the weather. I'm wearing gloves inside right now. They're fingerless gloves.
I love a good exterior
We'll get to
sit.
That later.
But I did a hike. I had been feeling very, very stifled by my schedule and not being able to hike, even though the weather was beautiful in Los Angeles after the rain went away. It was like my favorite kind of LA weather. So I eventually did get out, snuck away to go do a hike at Runyon Canyon. I don't do Runyon Canyon a lot, and I didn't do it a lot when I lived there. And I feel like every other time I go to Runyon, something weird happens. Like, I get lost.
A lot of snakes up in Runyon.
Well, I've run into snakes in Griffith. I don't know that I've ever run into a snake in Runyon, now that I think of it. I think I always start thinking about pumas in Runyon for some reason, even though I think there are more of those in Griffith Park. But
There are the other kind of pumas.
Yeah.
You know,
well, if we all get together for a hike, then yes. Something about the dismount at Runyon Canyon tends to throw me for a loop. Something weird happens. And this time I was trying to get back, and I was sort of pressed for time because I was really squeezing in this hike because I needed to get back home, shower, so I could go out for a meeting. And I found myself kind of in this weird area that didn't really seem like it was part of Runyon Canyon, which I guess is the Wattles Garden. And I was like, oh, well, it's really close to Curzon Street. I can just, like, it looks like the path goes out. There's an exit out onto the street there. I'd never been to this part of the park before, and I don't know how I got there because I don't think I was doing anything weird. But so I followed this path that was on Google Maps, and then there was a gate that was closed and locked, like with a chain link gate. And I could see through, it went into this path. And as far as I could tell from the map, if I kept going, I would get to the street. So I hopped the fence, which I was telling you guys, I was very impressed with myself for being able to do in my old age. I did poke a hole in my running leggings, I discovered later. So the victory was a little bit diminished. But then I got on the other side, and I found myself in this, like, empty, spooky, like, very opulent courtyard with fountains, this kind of Spanish-style courtyard. And I could see down that there was this mansion there, this completely empty mansion, like, and there were just all these, like, kind of fallen leaves around, and there was one groundskeeper there who was sweeping. I was very careful to use my highest pitched, least threatening voice to announce my presence to him. But
so it's kind of like in Runyon Canyon. I looked it up, and
it's
at the
foot of Runyon Canyon. The estate is called the Wattles Mansion. named for Gurdon Wattles, banker, wealthy Omaha banker Gurdon Wattles.
I had never heard of it before, but Tess had not only heard of it, but been there.
I had indeed. Yeah. The year was 2010. Mm-hmm. Picture it. I'm wedding scouting for a place to have a wedding. And I think you can just waltz in if you do it from the street. There's a parking lot.
Yes.
And then you go in and there are a bunch of like little seating areas. There's a pond with some turtles.
The park is open to the public sometimes.
I thought it was kind of always open.
The garden is like this public garden, and it was...
You can't go into the mansion, though.
No. It's owned by the state. That is what is interesting.
Yeah.
It's
definitely
like related to the park in that it's... It says it's like such an old mansion that it dates back to when it was like a hacienda for a rich person from somewhere else for the winter.
Yeah, it was a winter home for this guy from Omaha, this rich guy from Omaha, which is crazy to think about. Well, one of my favorite, like, not very like obscure facts, but fun facts about Los Angeles is that Western Avenue is called Western Avenue because it used to be like the westernmost street in LA.
Oh, really?
Which now like runs through Koreatown, which is basically like right in the middle of what we consider the city. But like everything to the west of that was really considered like the hinterlands.
Well, I saw they have really great archival photos of Franklin Village, which is kind of just west of Western, mm-hmm. around like, you know, Bronson Canyon and Beechwood and stuff. Yeah. And in the 30s, it was like, I mean, a lot of it was like farmland.
Yeah.
In the 20s, too. It was really like country-ish.
Well, the Wattles Garden was a farm. Like, that was another fun thing I discovered. And it went into like major disrepair in the 70s and 80s and was used as...
Oh, right. They said it was like a punk hangout.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is interesting because a lot of the stuff about it sounds really similar to Tompkins Square Park, which we'll get to later in a later segment. But it was like an open place for people to congregate, and then people congregated there, so they closed it.
Well, that was why I really, when we were planning our wedding, it was like a very small wedding, and we were just looking for just a place that wouldn't be like too far from, everybody kind of lived in the same vicinity. So we were like, oh, we'll just find a place that's central. And Wattles has so many rules.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I don't want that for a wedding. But I mean, it makes sense, but it's kind of a bummer considering that it was a punk hangout and everything, that it's like very strict.
It used to, I think, be a lot more sort of atmospherically decrepit. And I found it was a location in a Diana Ross music video from 1985 for a song called Eaten Alive, which sort of like, just seemed like her
Perfect.
Stab at a thriller. But you can look it up. I'll put it on the Twitter. It's a very low res movie or video, but you can kind of see that it wasn't like there were like vines growing and stuff and all this, you know, it was really kind of crumbling.
And it apparently has themed gardens and is one of the first tourist attractions with the themed gardens.
Well, look who did her homework.
Look who read the Wikipedia.
Look who read the Wikipedia. I was inspired by Emily's trip into Wattles to finally go to Brand Park.
You were?
Ooh. I was.
I didn't know this.
Yes, but I didn't. It was late, so I didn't venture all the way up to
the haunted
part because I'm scared.
Well, it's scary.
It is.
But did you go, like, did you drive through the big resplendent gate?
Yeah, I did. It is a very resplendent gate, and I took my daughter up to the library, which is, like, it's
a beautiful,
so beautiful
library.
What
the
a beautiful
most
library.
Beautiful building.
Yeah, there's like a little tea room that was closed. I did almost get into like an altercation with someone though who parked taking up two spots in front of me.
Well,
we glared at each other and then we had to push our kids next to each other on the swings. Just something that happens. Like, it's not the first time that's happened to me. But that was my hiking experience.
Did you feel the spirits around you?
Totally felt the spirits. It was really beautiful, but it also got me thinking about Glendale, how Glendale is like the suburbiest, has such a different vibe.
It's creepy because it's sort of not in the middle of nowhere, but like in the middle of like a really rich neighborhood.
Well, it starts to feel like the rest of America in a way, like Glendale does. It's like on the cusp there.
This park is weird because it feels like it's like a World's Fair type thing. And then when I looked it up, it was designed by the architect who designed, I think, the Chicago World's Fair, which is like the Devil in the White City World's Fair.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if it was the same landscape architect.
Well, apparently it was like it's very like Spanish, fake Spanish castle kind of looking.
Right.
And apparently it was like so, people liked it so much that that's why everyone started making their own houses fake Spanish.
The like Spanish revival.
Yeah.
It's truly beautiful. There's something very kind of threatening about that architecture, though. Just a lot of like,
it's a little fascist.
Yeah, a little bit fascist. But yeah, it was beautiful.
It's like Wagnerian
fascist. Exactly.
Like
a
World's Fair.
Exactly.
Some of you may not know the Olympics were originally just tagged on to the World's Fair.
Would you guys like to take a night call?
Yeah, let's take a night call. Speaking of plants and shrubbery.
Hey, this is Gloria. I'm calling with a question. So I just moved across town. I moved from one part of Los Angeles to another. And I had two plants suddenly die in my kitchen, two plants that I've had for years. And nothing really changed except for the house that I'm in. And it reminded me of something that my mom used to say when I was growing up, which is like when plants suddenly die, it means that they've sacrificed themselves to protect you from a spirit that's like, you know, not looking out for you. And I'm wondering, what do you think about this? I asked a friend, and she said her mom had said the same thing, too. And, I mean, both of our moms are Latina. Like, it might be a thing. I Googled it, and I can't really find anything. So what do you think? Can plants see ghosts?
I loved this.
This is a great call and a great question. I don't know. I have such bad luck with plants, other than, like, a few real dummy-proof plants that... Maybe I've just been surrounded by ghosts this entire time and I had no idea.
I had never heard of this idea before, but now that I have, it's all I want to believe forever now.
I have several things to say. I've been sitting here being
Please
like
do.
Really stewing on it. So I had not heard of this previously, but I love plants. I have like maybe too many plants. And there have been several times when plants that had been thriving and doing well. I think twice it was jasmine. And actually we moved into the house that we're in now about 6 years ago. And there was like basically like a hedge of jasmine. And we have the same, like we have gardeners come once a week. They kind of, you know, had worked for, I think, the previous two families. They'd been there forever. We hadn't changed the watering schedule. We hadn't changed anything. And there was like this period of time that I think I've talked about on this podcast before where I felt like maybe there was a curse placed on me and my family. Not like a serious curse, but a light curse. But a lot of things were going wrong. And in the middle of this period, the entire hedge of jasmine plants literally overnight died. To the point when I was like, did someone like bleach them or something? And we asked the gardeners, they hadn't done anything differently. My kids, I'm always watching my kids when they're in the yard. They hadn't dumped anything on them. And it was seriously spooky. And after that, things got a little bit better. But it was weird.
Oh, so the jasmine plant sacrificed
itself.
Yeah,
sacrificed themselves.
But until we heard this call, I was just like, well, it's another thing that went wrong in a series of a lot of like little things going wrong.
It ended the curse.
But it may have ended the curse. And then I also had an orchid that I think I had gotten right when I moved to L.A., and I had another like super, super bad year, basically like 2009 to like mid-2010. And this orchid had been doing super well. And like orchids kind of go dormant and then they come back. But again, it was like, and that took a little longer. It was like over the course of maybe 4 days. It had always been in the same place. So it was getting the same light, same watering. It just like turned brittle. And it was like it had been like, you know, vexed.
It saw a ghost.
I think it saw a ghost. So I put on Twitter after we heard this call a poll asking if when a plant dies suddenly, if it maybe was because it saw a ghost or not due to ghosts. 48% said because it saw a ghost. Now, that was the losing option, but by such a small margin. I honestly believe this. Yeah. I 100% believe that this is a true thing.
I like the phrasing of not due to ghosts.
Not due to ghosts. Wait, I need to find your poll here. When did you put it up? Is it done? Is it closed?
The poll has been closed.
Okay. We can run another poll on Night Call, though, now that people have more information about it.
There were 324 votes. votes, guys. Wow. And it was like a really, it was a tight race. But I was like, yeah, it's true that when a plant, I find that like for house plants, the biggest factor in whether or not they survive is light. So if you move to a new house, you're probably getting a different light source. Even obviously you were like, oh, the kitchen is a good place for this plant. Maybe in your new place, the kitchen is not a good place for the plant. But usually they'll give you signs that something that they're not liking where they are. And
yeah,
instead
there's something
of just
gradual.
Like, just like dropping dead.
Yeah.
If you have any stories like this, listeners, would you please give us a call?
Yeah, sudden plant death.
240-46-NIGHT or nightcallpodcast@gmail.com because this is like, this is my new beat, guys.
Yeah. Let's reiterate that not all plant death is necessarily due to seeing ghosts because I don't want anyone
just
to like attribute their own plant's failure.
Some of it's due to the planet dying.
But maybe that's the biggest ghost of all.
Oh, maybe the ghost maybe was always there.
It's like those sci-fi movies where the ghost is just like a pollen.
Speaking of sudden deaths, we all watched the hottest show on Netflix right now, as far as I can tell. I had to wait until I got back, and then I had my recuperation day from traveling and watched 6 out of 8 episodes of Russian Doll, the new show from Leslie Headland and Amy Poehler. And who's the third person on
Natasha Lyonne.
So I watched 6 out of 8 episodes. It is about a woman who mysteriously finds herself dying over and over and over again. And especially the first couple episodes are really about that, really about all the crazy accidental ways she dies. And I had crazy nightmares last night about getting hit by cars over and over and over again. It's colored my reception of the show somewhat, and maybe it'll be a while till I binge something again. But I kind of dig it. I still have one more episode to watch. I didn't finish it.
You also had a tweet where you said that you've been hit by a car a few times.
Oh, yeah, a few times.
Oh,
yeah.
I think we've talked about that. How many times have you been hit by a car?
3 times.
That's so horrible.
Yeah, all on my body. So not
so probably
like,
seeing that is different for you.
Yeah, it's kind of insane that I like to drive as much as I do because I am actually really terrified of cars. Probably in a comparable way to you guys talking about being nervous about flying. That's how I feel about driving.
Cars are scary, too. People should be more scared of cars.
You can die from a car so much more easily. I've been in 2 car crashes where I'm in the car, and I've been in 3 accidents where a car has hit my body.
Jeez Louise.
Did you guys know, not terrible. The same, but Ariana Grande was hit by a hockey puck twice as a child?
Really?
I feel like I've heard this weird fact.
She posted a story about it on her Instagram that's a picture of her as a child riding the Zamboni, and it's like, Ariana Grande Butera, like the little girl who was hit by the hockey puck at the Florida Panthers game twice, is fine.
What?
Wow.
I feel like that can really change your whole
I just feel like that's such a good origin story.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And then she could sing like from that point on. Russian Doll, how much did you guys watch of it?
I got through 4-6.
Okay.
So none of us have made it to the end yet.
I find it, in a way, it's a really good show to binge because obviously it's kind of a play on the fact that you're binging it. But it also, it's not as, like, light of a show as you initially think it is. I mean, it didn't give me nightmares, but eventually I felt like I needed to, like, take a breather. The emotional intensity is played both for laughs and also is, like, it just is intense.
Oh, it's so good. It's so dark.
It's so
I love
good.
It. It's very, I love Leslie Headland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Speaking
we
for
all
everybody.
We all love Leslie Headland. It's cool.
It's very dark and funny, and Natasha Lyonne is great.
Also, special shout out to Greta Lee, who went to high school with me.
Yes, shout out
and
Greta
Molly.
Lee. We love Greta Lee.
And she was a triple threat in high school. She was an amazing singer, dancer, and actor. She was so well cast in this.
Yeah, she plays Maxine, who's the friend.
Okay, she's so good. Yeah.
She's so
she's
good.
Very, very good.
She's the best.
The casting in this show is fantastic.
Yeah, everybody in the show was great. All the character people are
I really like the guy who plays Alan, too. He's good.
Yeah, that's who is it? Charlie Barnett?
Yeah, everybody likes him.
Yeah, he's great. I did think that the ex John, who's played by Yul Vasquez.
You said he's like Chris Noth in season one of Law and Order, which is exactly right.
He gave me the diet. Yeah, exactly. I was like, this is the diet. It's the trench Chris coat. Noth. It's the trench coat.
Yeah,
it's the hair.
He's like 80s
it's
man.
The general. New York 80s man.
Yeah, so this show is the New Yorkiest show.
Yes. Yes, yeah. It's
in the
I think
world.
It's like so beautifully shot in the
it's
all
great.
The outdoor kind of street scenes because it's all a lot of it takes place at night because that's kind of where she keeps getting dumped every time she has to restart a cycle. So it's all kind of on this Sunday night in New York, and it's very atmospheric and makes me appreciate. It's recognizable, but it still feels kind of heightened in a way.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's
I like
it
a lot.
It really reminded me of After Hours.
Yes,
which
totally,
is obviously
totally.
A super high compliment. And one of the things that I hear them talking about in a lot of the press for it is just how they were like, how come there's no like 70s movies about just like broads?
Yeah,
right.
Just really self-destructive ladies.
Yeah, out on the town.
Out on the town. And Natasha Lyonne obviously is like somebody who was a beloved child actor who then had a rough time and was a junkie. I don't know if that comes into play directly in the show, but it obviously seems like that's one of the things the show is a metaphor for.
Yes.
But I was looking it up because there was that thing, I don't know if you guys remember this, but Michael Rappaport was her landlord once and wrote this horrible op-ed for Jane Magazine.
This. Yeah, it was
about,
it was brutal. I remember this.
It was awful. It was like he was her landlord and he was like, she's a terrible tenant because she's like a junk. It was just like shaming her for being a junkie and it was really awful.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
And then she did almost die. She had like her lungs collapsed or something really intense. And so that to all be, happened.
We're talking
prior.
About Natasha Lyonne, right? I just want to make clear.
Well, because then I like looked this? Up. I looked up her backstory also, and it was like she was basically, her parents were Orthodox, which is interesting because there's some stuff about that, some Orthodox people in the show, and that she was basically like liberated from her family by the age of 16.
Wow.
Yeah. She was very much like a self-made person, I think, who was like, you know, got into show business. and I found this delightful.
Yeah, it was really, it's really good. I had just watched Can You Ever Forgive Me? And I was like, I love kind of taking the lens of like what's charming about New York and put kind of like grabbing it and giving it to like bitchy, complicated ladies.
Yes.
I love it because that's like,
they're very
know.
Of a piece, these two characters.
Exactly.
And
I
like,
also, I feel like I've said this on the show before, but I really enjoyed The Last OG recently as like a New York show that made me be like, ooh, New York, like what a wonderful place that is so lovely and atmospheric. And just like shows that do the thing people like from Woody Allen movies of people like strolling along, having conversations.
Well, that's what I mean, is I was like, you should take that mantle and give it to women.
Yeah.
Do it.
Right. Yeah,
and
did
like,
you guys
them
see
be
Private Life, the Tamara Jenkins film?
No, I haven't seen it
Netflix.
Yet.
I mean, that's like another good, like, it's like a, it feels like the Woody Allen movie that I actually want because I'm not that big of a fan of Woody Allen, but like, it's just sort of talky, people having their neuroses about a problem, and it's a lot of dialogue stuff, but it just kind of feels like wearing a chunky sweater.
This was like wearing an itchy jacket, but it's like a really cool jacket.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
It also, I love, it's self-referential in like a very smart and good way. And also, I like how they like blew their budget on the Harry Nilsson
song. This is what I was going to talk about. Yeah, that's like all their budget. It's because every episode they have to pay for the rights for it.
Well, there
Which
was a maximum number of times that they were allowed to use it.
Yeah.
So you'll notice it peters out after a while. And then they have Alan, who's like the character who comes in and he's in a similar predicament. And his song is a Beethoven concerto because it's like free.
In the public domain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which I thought was also just like funny. And I mean, it's such a perfect choice of songs to like have Harry Nilsson in there, who's so great. But yeah, such a good show. I always go into these shows that are like being, I think it has like a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I always am just like, I will be the rain cloud.
Also,
to dump
like
on
when
this.
Netflix is advertising something to me on the front page, that like puts me off.
Yes, exactly.
You know what puts me off to it though is not just the putting it on the front page or suddenly everybody's talking about it, but that there's usually, I feel like for me, there's no forewarning about it.
Like, they're suddenly there, right, yeah. And suddenly it's like, oh, there's this thing that everybody's talking about. I had no idea to even be anticipating a new show starring Natasha Lyonne and, like, right. produced by Amy Poehler. That would have been something I would have liked to know about a couple weeks ago. And now, apparently, I'm totally behind the game. Not that I need to be on top of the game with TV. I feel like I've taken that pressure off myself, like, years ago. But still, it's, like, the sort of, like, suddenly everybody seemingly has watched the whole thing over the course of 2 days and you have to catch up.
That's why we like wait a week on this jazzy podcast.
Exactly. I wonder what would happen if someone started a streaming service that had like, it was just a dump where they never told you anything that was going to happen. And uh-huh. there was no marketing once it did. And they just put everything, they lumped it all together.
Are you revealing Night Dump?
Well, now that you want to roll it out like this, it's blowing okay. the no PR angle.
It's like a dumpster full of videos.
It's a dumpster full of videos. Well, because I've been, for like the longest time, I've been pushing.
Live tweet the location.
Yeah, right?
Whoever gets there first. Gets all the copies.
So you get the content.
Gets scent of a woman.
But I was really like with Too Many Cooks, which I talk about every third episode of this podcast.
The dream of like, the early 2010s is alive on Night Call.
It's all I talk about in a way. But Too Many Cooks, I was like, why aren't things dealt with? Why is not everything like Too Many Cooks, where you don't know what it is, you don't know why it's there. It's like you'll talk about it afterwards, but ideally no one who's been involved comments on it at all.
See, this is what I have been saying, which is that what people really want is to watch television that's been programmed for them.
Yes.
Like it used to be of like, here's a show, now here's another show. You don't really get to choose.
You don't get to choose. I think we should start this and we should call it You Get What You Get and You Don't Get Upset. And it's just, Molly just like reeled back and bonked her head.
Oh,
that's what we're going to talk about.
It's just amazing that you've been saving that in your back pocket this whole time.
Well, also,
I just legit snorted, not in an affected way.
Tess is wearing fingerless gloves, which she like announced when I saw her. And I like almost sliced my finger off last night, which is also
we're falling apart.
We're like, is this because we're watching Russian Doll or is it because we're like aware of it because we're watching Russian Doll?
Yeah.
I'm not getting into any staircases anytime soon.
No.
No.
And it's funny that the stair got her every time and didn't get the other guy. Spoiler alert. Sorry.
Well,
very important spoiler.
It's also nice because this show is very much like everybody's probably like big chill age.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, this is the recognizable reality where people are still having like birthday parties for themselves.
Okay, but wait, that's not a recognizably realistic birthday party, Molly.
What, that somebody would make you chicken? I would make you chicken.
A lavish party at a loft where everyone like sleeps together after eating chicken.
That's what I imagine New York is like.
Emily, fact check.
Yes, I do that every night. a new chicken and a new warm body every night.
Nice.
Two warm bodies. One is the chicken's body. That's New York.
I was very drawn in also by the lost cat narrative aspect.
Oatmeal, which is a very cute cat, an extremely cute cat. Good cat casting on Russian Doll.
There were a few moments when I was like, I'm in on this show. One of them was, I think it's in the first episode, she goes, I'm in the game.
Right. Yes.
I'm Michael Douglas.
Yeah.
And that made me laugh so hard. But I was like, I'm all in.
I have yet to see how it all pans out. But like, I really like between trying to figure out what it's about and whether it's about like coding and gaming, which is her job in it. So that was like kind of a hint for that. And then whether it's about like psychotherapy, on the other hand, those are like the two things I've been bouncing between thinking about in the context of the show, which is sort of fun to think about them in tandem. But it really does feel like it's more about the latter near the end, as far as like, especially, and no spoilers, but just like playing things over and over and like trying to process things in a way
and also the therapist who's played by Elizabeth Ashley, who's so good,
Where did she come from?
I forget. I looked her up.
She feels like you know her.
She feels like you know her better than you do.
Well, she sounds kind of like Candace Bergen sounds now, like her or somebody. I feel like I was maybe somebody who is in Book Club, which was like one of the best movies of last year that nobody talked about. But,
well, again, it's like people that you know in real life. This is the thing: is you're like everybody. That's what the show is about, also too. Is it's like everybody in real life knows like women over the age of whatever that are like cool and interesting and people, but there's like none of them in movies and TV. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when you see them in things like this or like in Slums of Beverly Hills, which was Natasha Lyonne's big breakout, you're like, oh, like real people.
Yes. Also, I love that the women are cast to be these kind of like sparkling, interesting, layered people. And then the male characters are just like, whatever, whatever. You got a good line about Columbo because he's wearing a trench coat. But I was like, this is, I loved seeing the men as accessories.
Mm-hmm. It does kind of feel like Alan is going to be like an NPC, like a non-player character, just because of his apartment. It's like he's like a sim. But I don't know.
He is. Hey, speaking of Sims and, no, there's no,
I know we want any excuse to talk about the Sims.
There was a good Sims article about how
fucking love Sims.
It was about something fucked up about it. I thought it was interesting.
Oh, it was Sim City.
Yeah.
Oh, Sims in the City.
No, but how Sim City is, like a capitalist nightmare horror thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember how scary it was when like a hurricane would come to your Sim City on like the old DOS one?
Oh yeah,
and there would be this horrible sound like.
Maybe your Sim City saw a ghost.
I don't know. Maybe so.
Oh hey, speaking of terrifying things, why don't we take a night call?
Ooh.
Or it's actually a night email, so you can again.
Spooky.
Give me ooh. Okay, nice. Here, I'll read it because it's right on my phone right here. Hello, night folks. I just finished listening to the alt milk convo at the end of the new episode, and the question of whether or not spider silk milk exists had me trying to figure out where I'd heard that before. It turns out I think it's this, with a link that we will put somewhere in the show notes. Because spider silk is so strong but inefficient to harvest from spiders, some folks made goats make it via their milk. Goat milk, while not my favorite to drink necessarily, is tip-top for yogurts and cheeses and all that, and apparently for producing spider silk. Best, Daniel. This is true.
Fun.
And this blows my mind.
This is what I was sort of indirectly referencing when I said that there was spider silk milk, was that there were these goats who were genetically modified to make spider silk in their milk.
Yes.
That's what it is, wild. Is that it's like they squirt out the milk and then you turn the milk into
the spider.
There's proteins.
They're like spider goats. They're like actually
they're
like the closest thing to Spider-Man that actually exists in real life.
So I guess the deal is that scientists were like, okay, so spider silk is really strong and elastic, and they wanted to use it to make artificial ligaments and like suture eyes and make bulletproof vests and all this crazy stuff. And they were like, great, we'll get a spider farm where we have so many spiders spinning all the day. But then the spiders were just like, didn't like to be near other spiders, and they ate each other. They just ate each other, and they were like, all right, next in line.
That's a
is
problem with your
goats.
Workforce sometimes.
Well, also, maybe the spiders had, maybe it was bad work conditions for the spiders.
Yeah, the spiders were like, we don't have to spin for you.
For 24 hours a day?
No way.
I'm so sad that I missed Food Moods when you guys had your podcast by yourself. I really love this new addition to the Night Call family.
Well, guess what? It's back right now. Food Moods. Food Moods. With Emily.
Emily, you had expressed interest in talking about how you're trying to get spracked?
Oh, yes. Well, this was a discussion because Molly was talking about milk tea. This was a revelation to me that it is mostly vegan. That opens up a whole new world to me because I've never had milk tea because I figured I couldn't. And I haven't had Thai iced tea for a zillion years, even though I love it so very much. It's so sugary and caffeinated and good. I feel like I mentioned on here before that right now I'm in a matcha latte phase, which is a very expensive habit. And I wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't because my brain is broken and I'm tired all the time.
I OD'd on matcha. I had a bad matcha encounter. And
she's
I had
done
to
with
stop.
Matcha now.
See, I feel like I've been chasing a dragon with matcha because I had one that was really poorly made at Pan Quotidien where the lady clearly did not know what she was doing. She just like took like what looked like a third a cup of matcha powder and just like plonked it in some hot
Kellerer, a bad matcha latte.
And it was like, well, but it ended up being
guys,
the
feel
best
like we
matcha
always
latte
talking,
ever.
It was? Oh, because it was so sugary?
No, it wasn't sugary. It was so matcha-y. It was like,
oh.
It was like
well, you could,
the purest high I've ever had in my life. It was full body.
I was going to say, I feel like we always just end up talking shit about Le Pan Quotidien here on this podcast.
I am always
done. I have nothing bad to say about Pan Quotidien.
Well, I've got plenty, but I'll save it.
Is Molly right in between? Is this a...
Of course.
Okay,
course.
Great.
What do you, how do you think? Yeah.
The
perfect Venn diagram night call.
Yeah.
Great. So that's been my thing lately.
Well, check out milk tea because it blows your brain a little bit.
Have you ever thought about just eating espresso beans? I know that's a very 90s thing.
Does that
to
work?
Say.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
There's different qualities to getting spracked. And I feel like at a certain point, the coffee caffeine thing is just a kind of body and heart thing and not.
Do you fuck
a brain
with cold
thing.
Brew?
Yes, I fuck with cold brew, but not past like 2 p.m.
See?
Have you tried Bulletproof?
Yes,
I
have.
Is that the butter coffee?
Bulletproof
is grass-fed butter.
Bulletproof coffee is very good. You can also do it with coconut oil.
What? I read that article about that guy in the New Yorker that one time.
You don't buy it from the guy.
You just make it yourself.
That guy was such a scammer.
It was such bullshit. He was oh, it's like the butter bio essences into the coffee. He was such a scammer that I was like, fuck this shit.
Well, I don't buy his stuff. The main thing, and this is the takeaway, this is anytime there's a bullshit food trend going on that claims to do one thing or another, I feel like I'm pretty good at trying it, being open-minded, and figuring out what the actual base principle that's not bullshit is. So in the case of Bulletproof coffee, I think the important thing, and I do this generally, is that you need to have some fat at the beginning of the day, especially with caffeine. Like, you need to have some fat to just, give the caffeine something to, glue onto. This is not scientific.
The fat's drives the thing.
Put milk in the coffee.
If you're using whole fat milk, non-fat milk, it's not going to do it.
And even, 2% is not enough. Full fat coconut milk. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But does coconut milk have the same omega-3s?
I feel like coconut milk has everything.
Because the deal is it has to be grass-fed milk because it has, the omega-3s.
We're going to solve the milk problem.
We are.
But the real thing that's wonderful is to please advertise with us Nutribullet, my favorite product that I own in my home. I've had one for 6 or 7 years now, and it hasn't failed me yet. It is, the best thing in the world. But that's what I put my coffee in. If I've done the Bulletproof thing, which I haven't done in a while, but when I did do it, I would put it in that, and it just made into this delicious, frothy, fatty cup of coffee. It was so good.
Don't you think people just what we enjoy about all of these things is the ritualism?
Yeah,
some of it is due to that, but I made the switch over to full fat milk a couple years ago. Have not turned back, and I honestly do think that there's something to. If you're getting grass-fed milk that's full fat and you're putting it in coffee and drinking a ton of coffee, is another key factor is that you have to be drinking
a ton
of coffee. but I did notice that it made me feel more coffeed up more quickly than when I had been doing the low-fat milk in my coffee. By the way, guys, now that we're talking about brands taking over food...
Mm-hmm.
We got a night call that references our Big Kale conspiracy discussion from last week. I think this belongs in Food Moves.
Oh, absolutely.
Can we read it?
A night kale, would you say?
Nice one.
So this night email comes to us from Grant, pronounced Grant. Thank you, Grant. Dear ladies of Night Call, big fan of the podcast, been following you gals since Grantland. Wanted to reach out because the previous episode, Molly and Tess mentioned the rise of kale and how it is bullshit. My girlfriend, shout out to Karina, pronounced Karenna, sorry, shout out to Karenna, turned me onto a podcast called Why We Eat What We Eat. Yeah. In one episode, they take a deep dive into the rise of kale and how a single woman is behind it all, Oberon Sinclair. I mean everything, even the American Kale Association. I'm providing a link to the podcast. It's only 20 minutes long. I suggest you ladies give it a listen. More people need to know the truth about big kale. Thank you, Grant. Did you guys listen to this?
I haven't yet, but I plan to because I was also, there were several articles written, I think like a year ago.
Yeah, there's this one in paper here.
Yes. And it talks about how, yeah, this was like a big PR push for her, but there was also a farmer who made too much kale and made these shirts that said eat more kale just to get rid of the kale that he or she had made. I dipped a toe in. I have more reading on it tonight.
Oberon Sinclair.
I know.
This is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I remember in high school, I worked at a deli I worked in the deli case of the grocery store. And I just knew of kale as a thing we'd just be sent out into the produce section to grab because it was like 50 cents a bunch. And we would just use it as garnish on a big like bowl of Jell-O salad. Just kind of like wedge it in the side. And that's like my only knowledge of what kale was good for a very long time.
Well, would you guys like to hear some kale facts?
Yes,
and
please.
Also some PR facts about food that I'm learning from this article called The Strange Mystery of Who Made Kale Famous. Apparently, kale jumped by 60% between 2007 and 2012. Before that, the largest buyer of kale was Pizza Hut. But apparently, orange juice was created by ad agency Lord & Thomas to help the California Fruit Growers Exchange utilize an overabundance of citrus trees in 1907.
Wow.
The concept drink an orange made orange juice a staple morning drink.
Oh my God. Do you remember when you were a kid and you saw the Tropicana ads with the orange with the straw stuck in it? And you were just like, great, I'm going to try that next time.
No, of course.
And your parents were like, no, it won't work. And I was like, oh, why?
And there was a woman, Linda Resnick, who was behind the pomegranate movement.
The
wonderful company or whatever they're called.
Okay. Oberon Sinclair, founder of My Young Auntie PR in New York City, with a client list including Hermé, Vivienne Westwood, and Jack Spade, was hired by the American Kale Association in 2013 to make kale cool. But that doesn't seem right if it started in 2007.
That's about when I feel like, I mean, when I started eating kale, it was because I was dating a very crunchy vegan, and it was like the cheapest thing, and we would just have it all the time.
Yeah, vegans have always loved
yeast
kale.
All over it, and I mean, I feel like it became cool somewhat after that, you know, around 2009 or something like that. It's a very post-recession food, I feel like.
The American Kale Association doesn't exist.
What?
Go on.
Okay, so this person like talked to Oberon Sinclair, who was like, I made kale cool by putting it on like the menu of all these trendy New York restaurants and like guerrilla marketing it. And then he had a call scheduled with Drew Ramsey, assistant professor of clinical psychiatry at Columbia University and the founder of National Kale Day and the writer of 50 Shades of Kale. He said, I've heard that
you
before.
You get a Pulitzer for that?
Have you talked to anyone at the American Kale Association? I'm not sure they exist.
Whoa.
Apparently, she, and then the writer said, they'd assumed the American Kale Association was a group of kale farmers, but in fact, the opposite is true. Many kale farmers are actually suffering from kale's sudden popularity. The demand is rising, but the supply is outpacing it.
It's like quinoa. Wow. It's like all these other crops.
I have to just say that I am going to be a champion for parsley right now.
I love
and
parsley.
I'm gonna call. No, everyone does. And that's because
Isn't cilantro more controversial?
Yes, I'm saying parsley is completely uncontroversial. It has more vitamins
so
and
good
minerals
for you.
Than kale. Yeah. It's so good for you. It is great for your stomach.
Yes.
It's great for your breath.
It gets rid of garlic.
I love parsley. It gets rid
if
of garlic.
If you have really
it's
bad garlic
easy
breath.
To grow.
Yeah.
Yes, you got to go with the parsley. So I'm going to go ahead and call it now that I'm going to do for parsley as a hobby, you know, just out of the kindness of my heart, I'm going to elevate it past kale. We're going to cream kale with parsley.
I can see it having an arugula-like place in the American right? consciousness, sort of a spicy green that you can use as a base for a salad.
I you wonder could who tempura was, fry it. That would be
oh,
good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you can. I've had arugula. That. It's very good. That,
is it good?
Yes, it's quite
it sounds
good.
Really good. Thought I invented it. Damn it.
Tempura is, parsley?
Yeah.
This is the thing about any of these foods, though, including quinoa, especially including kale, is that a lot of times when these foods are introduced and they're made into things that you like are supposed to eat all the time because it's cool, or somebody tells you it's gonna make you like live forever, or whatever the case might be, or make your skin beautiful, people do not get educated properly on how to prepare it. There's so many stupidly prepared kale salads. I bought a salad once somewhere in LA this last trip out. I can't remember. It was just like a raw, like chunks of raw kale in the salad. And I actually like rolled up my sleeve. I put in the dressing that came with it and I massaged it myself. Like, because you can't eat just like raw kale like that unless it's very
yeah,
finely
shredded. People don't
shredded.
Know that. People don't care because it's also like if you're selling something as being super healthy, then like
the more unpleasant it is, people are like, yeah, give it to me.
Oh,
I
it
love
must be
it.
Working. Yeah.
To me, the idea of someone else massaging my kale is like too gross.
Oh, no, I'm fine.
I just
fine
wouldn't
with
want
it.
To well, eat
that's,
lettuce that had been.
That's why kale is so
with.
Funny, is because it's marketing. It's all just marketing. It's just like a tough green that's been marketed.
It's just leafy
to be
broccoli.
Like soup.
That's all that it is.
Broccoli
is so much better. Mm. Yeah. I have to really stand for broccoli here. I love broccoli. Mm. I grow my own broccoli now.
Ooh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm
hope
dedicated.
I hope it doesn't see any ghosts.
I hope it doesn't see a ghost. But I would rather it see a ghost than me see a ghost. So if that's how it has to be, that's how it has to
I
be.
I want a pin now of Tessa's petrified broccoli. Like really
I can do that for you.
Oh, did you guys see the ghost apples? Did I send you the ghost apples?
No.
It was so cool. It was going around. It was a place where the apples froze, but they were full of water, and then the like skin rotted off, but they're just like
yes, I saw
ice
this.
Hanging in the shape of apples.
Did you also what? See the thing about after the rain in California, all these strawberries were left on the beach in Ventura?
Yeah, the beach strawberries.
Whoa.
We'll put beautiful. This is the best food news of the past week, I have to say.
It is.
Food news land art is where all of our interests lie.
Yeah.
Night Call would like to get into some land art if you want us to come draw squiggles on some beaches for you.
For real. If you want us to do that, please give us a call at 240-46-NIGHT or email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. Also, please follow us on social media. We are Night Call Pod on Twitter, Night Call Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. And if you haven't already, please rate, review, and subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
For
it's a
sure.
nice thing to do.
Yeah, I want to mention the writer Audrey Wallen made a meme once that was about how men don't own the void, and it had a bunch of land art made by men that was crossed out. And
Audrey
said,
Wallen is how I know about the strawberries on the beach.
Oh, cool. We here at Night Call agree that women own the void. Which
women
is...
own the void. Give us the void. Give it back.
I also enjoyed all the parts in Russian Doll where she was like, I'm the abyss.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did too. Good show, Russian Doll.
Very Pacino-y.
Very Pacino.
Good show.
And honestly, her hair is so great. And it made me, again, long for curly hair because I would
so
go
wrong.
So hard
you
into
would
curly
not,
bangs.
You have no idea. I hope we Freaky Friday so you can see how much you don't
I've
want it.
I've been hoping we Freaky Friday since day one. So eventually it'll happen.
Can we do a Freaky Friday?
A Freaky Friday.
It's a secret Santa.
A Freaky Thursday. It would be a Freaky Thursday. And Thursday is a great day to switch. I think because with when it's Freaky Friday,
you have the whole weekend.
That's what I'm saying. When it's
you're not rushed.
Thursday,
you're not rushed on Sunday.
You get to experience a little work, you know, and a little play. And I think that's a good balance when you're switching bodies with a friend.
It's over.
Thanks for tuning in.
Shout out to Homestar Runner.
Strong back,
This is basically Teen Girl Squad, the podcast.
Yeah, it is. I showed my six-year-old son Teen Girl Squad, and he was kind of like equal parts, like, what is this? And what is, where is more of this?
It's like when I found my parents' alternative comics.
Yeah, totally.
They tried to hide from me.
It's our crumb.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a good end of the show fake out. Mm-hmm. And then we came back for one last
segment.
That's
right.
And now we're gone again.
We end every week, but we come back.
We come back. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening to Night Call.